the OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Okay, you are very welcome along to the Classic Game Club here on OTB AM. It's the show where we go back and watch old matches that are available in full on the internet. And thanks to official GEA on YouTube uploading a particularly interesting match. Well, interesting or not interesting, I think we'll get to that in a while. We are thankful that we were able to go back and watch the 1998 All-Ireland final between Galway and Kildare. We've got Ger and Tommy here. Tommy, this was your suggestion a couple of weeks ago before official GEA put this up, so your prayers have been answered.
Yeah, thankfully. To be honest, we're going to get to a little later that the quality of the game itself, how good it really was. I think that...
Let's get to it now. Come on, let's get to it now.
You obviously thought it was a lot better.
No, third greatest game of all time,
according to one noted scribe.
Third greatest All-Ireland final.
Now, look, the third greatest All-Ireland final of all time, or was it the last 20 years?
All time.
That's how Martin Brahney described it. I think it was actually a really, really good game. I think it was a really good game. But I have a feeling that the fact that I've watched The Year Till Sunday 8 times perhaps tinted the fact that I thought it was way better than it was. But it still was such a good game. There's moments of individual madness, never mind brilliance. It's class.
Ger, were you at this?
I don't agree, no.
I didn't realise, Tommy, that this was your suggestion, because I was going to wreak a revenge on Owen that would never stop for forcing me to go through this in the middle of a global pandemic. And I'm doing this, as you can see, so we're recording this on Sunday evening. So if anybody wonders about me problem drinking on Monday morning, we've actually recorded this on Sunday evening. I just wanted to make that clear. And I am going to be having a glass of wine in the middle of this, because this is the first time I've seen this game since 1998. I was at the game. I was reporting for FM 104. And I was at every game that year. I covered the whole thing, and like at that stage, that's back in the glory days of journalism, where you could walk into dressing rooms after matches. And I had been at every Kildare match, and I'd been in the changing room after every game, and I'd been at some of the training sessions and the build up to it. And like, it's very hard for me to put this in any other context than to explain that in the 1990s, Kildare were Mayo are now. They were the Mayo of that decade. At the start of the decade, Mikko had arrived, and everybody had assumed that he would bring glory with him. They reached a league final in his first season, and then they crapped out against Loud in the first round. And then he left, and Dermot Early came in, and then he came back, and this is his second flowering. And in 1997, they had run Meath, who were then the All-Ireland champions, to a trilogy of matches before losing in the first round or the second round of the Leinster Championship that year. And so there was no back door. So that I actually, in retrospect now, having watched that game today, think the 97 team was slightly better than the 98 team, particularly the 98 team that takes the field in the final because of the injuries that some key players had. And like that's the smell of want of their supporter base was the same smell of want that you have of the Mayo fans for the last decades.
Well, it's surely a bigger spell I want, is it not? Like, I mean, it's first of all a bigger...
I mean, yes.
The Mayo drought in 2 years, next year, in 2021, will be the exact drought that Kildare were going through in 1998. 70 years.
Wow, really?
You're a millennial, though, and you understand the OG concepts. Kildare were the OG of this whole smell of want thing and famines, and they kind of created the whole idea for Mayo to saunter in centre stage and take that whole kind of it'd be great to see them do it. The thing that haunts me to this day is after the semi-final, everybody assumed that Kildare were going to win because we beat Dublin, we beat Meath, the previous three All-Ireland winners on the route to the final, and Galway had scraped through one of the worst games that had been played all year in the All-Ireland semi-final. And on the day of the game, I remember like taking my seat and some woman going, "Oh, Soss is playing, is he? I'm delighted for him, he's going to get his medal." Some old woman kind of there. And I was like, the game hasn't started. Like, what are you talking about? This Galway are really good. 2-1 on Kildare, 2-1 on.
2-1. The fact that Soss started that game, that was through an injury crisis all that week, was it? Do you remember that?
Yeah. There was a bunch of injuries.
I think Mikko really mishandled that though, dropping on that day. We might get to it a little later, but there's a good article on how he had been the worst few minutes he played all year been in the semi-final against Kerry. Then he got told by Mikko and the selectors that he was dropped. Just got, the team got named, I think, on the field in Nace. That's how we found out. And Mikko said he didn't have time to ring him in advance and let him know that he was dropping him for the All-Ireland final. And then on the day of it, there's a number of injuries. There's four or five changes and he ends up getting drafted in. And he ends up man-marking Michael Donnellan for the first 15 minutes that day.
Yeah. And that's,
he did get moved fairly quickly. But look, looking back on it, it is car crash. You can see you're literally driving towards the oncoming traffic, and that's not the light at the end of a tunnel. It's an oncoming train, and that oncoming train is the pace of the various players that that Galway have. And it's just the fact that Kildare's defence in the first half is reasonable, but it's just actually quite fluky in many instances that gets them out of jail, and ultimately it's the buzzsaw in the second half.
Yeah. Can I ask a question, Ger?
Yeah, go for it.
Sorry, Owen. The want, the smell of want that hasn't endured throughout Mayo football for all these years, like, it's still there. It still resonates so strongly, even if they aren't, say, in the top three of Owen's power rankings. What happened to Kildare's want after 1998? Did it just evaporate?
It came back. It came back with when Geezer got them to the All-Ireland semi-final, and they got, Marty Clark was brilliant that day, but also some fairly horrific refereeing decisions went against him. And then Jim McGuinness, I can't even remember which comes first. McGuinness is the year after.
Yeah, Cassidy, 2011.
And since then, it just, they have had a load of nice athletes, but there's been, so that team that you saw in 98 was a team of men. And the team under McGeaney had several men in it. Probably was short one or two absolute bastards that it needed to get over the line. Mm. But look, everybody says it. Kildare, too nice, you know. Yeah, everybody be happy to bring in those lads home to meet the parents. Whereas, actually, that's not what you want. Like,
that
you
team
want,
in 98.
You want a team of killers.
That team in 98 had a couple of killers.
Yeah, it had men in it. From the goalkeeper to the corner forwards. Well, one of the corner forwards, anyway. They were hard ass. Looking back on it, Brian Murphy comes off the bench and can win his own ball in the full forward line, and you're thinking, ah, lads, that's what it's like when the ball doesn't come back like a table tennis. Stick a big man up in the full forward line, he's going to win his own ball. And anyway, a really interesting couple of years for Kildare football. Like, really brilliant to be an eyewitness to. And because I was too young when Mick arrived first in 1990 to fully appreciate what was going on, but that summer, after every match in Dublin, I would go home to a tie and the pubs were lit. Like, it was unbelievable. Everybody was, you know, you'd be in a pub and normally if somebody spilled a drink in that pub on somebody else, there'd be a row outside the Chippers. At that point, people were spilling drinks over each other and it was grand. It was like, that's quite a sea change. But, you know, it's I don't know. They need to get back there. They, like, you kind of look at this going, we have not experienced anything like this as a football culture in a decade now. And it's very sad.
So Mikko arrives in 1990. Was that the year that Tompkins and Fahey went to Cork?
No, they'd already gone, sure. They'd won a couple of All-Irelands in the football by that stage. And 1990 is the year that they do the double. So was it 90 or 91 was his first season? I can't honestly, now you put me on the spot, Tommy. Go to my head, I'd say 91, but I could be wrong about that. But he was there for 3 or 4 years, didn't quite make the breakthrough, but certainly raised standards, fell out with the county board, and Dermot Early Senior stepped in for either 1 year or 2 years, and that team was still really good. But again, just couldn't get it done. And then Mikko came back in 97, they had that great season. 98 had a great season. 99, they collapsed. And then 2000, they win another Leinster, and ultimately meet Galway again in an All-Ireland semi. Just did nothing in that semi, as far as I can remember. Like, it wasn't a close game at all. Kind of like the second half more than the first.
Mm. Just to give the full context on 98 then, and Kildare's path to the final, as I've mentioned, 70 years since their last All-Ireland at this stage. They hadn't been in a final since 1935. So even just the idea of being there in the big day, there was a long old famine for that. So they had that back. As Gerard said, beaten three of the last All-Ireland winners, Dublin in the Leinster quarter-final, Leash in the semi-final, Meath then in the Leinster final, and then that All-Ireland semi-final against Kerry where Mikko takes down Paddy. So this is Mikko's 21st and last ever All-Ireland final as a manager. Kevin Walsh in A Year Till Sunday said that the Kerry results had Kildare as strong favourites, and it's not some sort of pie in the sky trying to play down their chances. As you said already about the odds, I think they were actually 9-4 while Kildare, Galway were 9-4, obviously, Kildare were back down to 9-4 on at this point. You might just get into a bit of Galway context because it's very interesting, obviously. Like, they hadn't been in an All-Ireland final since 1983. They'd only won Connacht once in the previous 10 years, and they've obviously just turned to Mayo man John O'Mahony in the autumn of 1997 to get them over the line in 98, hoping to win their first All-Ireland in 32 years. The last team to win an All-Ireland in Galway, obviously, that great three-in-a-row team in the 1960s. And we can have a listen to a little bit of A Year Till Sunday. First of all, you can hear the voice of Michael Donlan, which not a lot of people tend to hear. But here he is talking about the weight of history on this Galway team.
My father won All-Ireland in 1964 and he was captain. My grandfather in 1925 won All-Ireland with Galway. You're always reminded of it. Will you ever be like the father? Will you ever be like the grandfather? Things like that.
Michael Donlan there in A Year Till Sunday. It's kind of
that's great. That clip is just fantastic.
You're not going to be good enough, young fella, unless you had that All-Ireland medal in your back pocket.
I think this matters. I actually think this really matters a lot. Like, I think that, you know, I was thinking about the greatest managers of all time. And at some point, Jack Carning in it says, Mikko, this would have been the sweetest one of them all if he could have pulled it off. And, like, it would have. It the achievement that he had with Kerry was unparalleled, right? An absolutely sensational achievement and innings. But to do it in a culture that has been a culture that has experienced nothing but defeat for seven successive decades is completely different from doing it in a culture where, like, at least in Michael Donlan's family, there is a sense of, you know, you can do it. It's actually, it's an achievable thing. Like, when Kildare won the under-20 title 2 years ago, that was their first national title since the 70s at any grade. No minor All-Ireland, no under-21, no under-20. Jeez, I don't even know if they've won a club All-Ireland. Maybe they have, but I'm not sure that they have. So, like, Michael Donlan in that game is a 21-year-old buck, and there's five of the under-21s on that team from the Galway team that year. And just having, at least in the culture, the fact they have won an All-Ireland before, I think it really matters in an All-Ireland final. Like there was a nervousness around both sides, but the nervousness kind of gave way in Galway's in the Galway team to actually, you know what, we're living here and we're still alive. Whereas the nervousness kind of burned out the energy in Kildare, I felt, in this game. And so Mayo haven't been able to get over the line. Kildare haven't been able to get over the line. Tyrone, that's why I so value Tyrone's achievement in getting over the line. And even Armagh's, like Armagh to a lesser extent, in that they only managed to do it once, despite the fact that they were probably just as good as that Tyrone team. This stuff, having a culture of people who have actually been in All-Ireland finals and lost them or won them, it really matters.
Mm. It's interesting, actually, you mentioned Tyrone. This is the very day that Tyrone actually win that minor All-Ireland. 1998, the one that obviously a swathe of players come through and actually win it. So maybe that's part of it as well, that they actually have that national title in 98 to actually go on and win a senior one. But I do accept it is special that they hadn't won one at all and they managed to do it. And maybe, to be honest, Armagh was actually a pretty big impact on that. Maybe it was the teams in the early 90s from Ulster that were winning All-Irelands that had a big impact on Armagh to say that, you know, Ulster can come as well.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting. Just go through Galway's route to the final then. They come up against Mayo in Castlebar in the first round in Connacht. Like, I mean, the stakes during these non-qualifier era of football is just incredible. Like, so Mayo, obviously, coming off the back of the last two consecutive All-Ireland finals, having lost them, they have to go to Castlebar to try and beat Mayo to keep their season alive. They do that, they beat them, then they get through Leitrim in the Connacht semi-final, then Roscommon almost knocked them out in the Connacht final. That goes to a replay and Galway eventually beat them, and then it's Derry then in the All-Ireland semi-final. Just got to play a couple of John O'Mahony clips from A Year Till Sunday. It's interesting in one of the scenes where O'Mahony is talking about the national perception of Galway. Here he is holding up a newspaper, proper dressing room wall stuff, talking about what the national media have been saying about Galway.
You read this after the last day. These are the people that Galway fancy dance, get the simple things wrong. I'm not a Galway man, but I have an awful loyalty to this group, and I would be hurt by that kind of a situation, by what's been said. A nice team. Don't have a midfield pairing capable of winning a majority of clean possession. Missing threes, all those kind of things. There's only one fucking answer for that.
Right.
Yeah, it's because we've got so few actual inside the dressing room accounts pre big games in the GA. This is before the replay against Roscommon, by the way. We don't know how common this is, but it kind of seems so out of character for John O'Mahony to be holding this up and saying we're going to effing show them on Sunday.
Nice team.
That stuff makes a difference, lads. It absolutely makes a difference. I don't know whether the Dublin team of the last 7 years have managed to block out the media or if that's just a myth that they've blocked it out, but all that stuff matters. The papers, the headlines, like, I don't know. Like, I think that's just a brilliant clip, but like, it definitely still happens today.
Yeah, it probably does. There's then just one final thing before we kind of get into the game. One final clip I want to play anyway is another bit from John O'Mahony. Here's what he's saying about the tactics and how he wants his Galway team to approach this game. And here are some of his thoughts on Kildare before the All-Ireland.
What that does is prevents them from getting this blanket defence that they're notorious for this year, and it also gives us an opportunity to expose the weakness in their lack of pace from getting onto the ball quickly. Okay, so the roles there are clearly defined. On the midfield, I just come to the midfield for a second. So the challenge for you is to make sure that at no stage during the 70 minutes that McQuarrie isn't drifting away. All right. The one thing we don't want is that there's two white jerseys jumping for it and everybody's looking at each other.
Blanket defence, Kildare, Mick O'Dwyer, ruining football, Ger.
Look, again, to go back to something that like I've talked about again and again about Kildare and how they've lost their way in recent years is what is their cultural identity? What do they stand for? And watching this game, it was like really athletic, very strong, great fielders, a short passing game in defence to make sure that you found space and then get it forward really quickly. Like that's the type of identity that everybody could get behind. And their defence was sensational. There was one point where I think Neil Finnegan had the ball in the right corner forward situation and the camera, whatever the angle was, reminded me exactly of that famous picture of Diego Maradona and the wall of Belgians that he faced in the World Cup in 86, where it turned out the ball had been broken off from a free kick. But anyway, it was like this amazing, iconic photograph of Maradona facing a wall of the opposition. And Kildare were brilliant at that in the first half. And actually, the defence did okay. If they hadn't kept kicking wide and kicking the ball into the goalkeeper's hands, they held the Galway team to a few enough scores to win that match.
Galway had an exceptional period at the start of the second half where Jaff Fallon kicked those 2 points, Finnegan kicked 2 points, and Joyce got the goal. And that was the winner of the game, really, like. I agree with you. The Kildare defence had been doing very well up to that. But when you talk about Kildare's style of football, like, and you mentioned earlier on that, was it Murphy to come off the bench and he hits the post later on, the big full forward?
Yeah. Meath, man.
I don't understand why.
No, Corkman. Corkman. Scored the goal against Meath in the Leinster final. That's what I'm mistaken.
I wonder if that a sliding doors moment, as you said earlier on, because they did play a Route 1 style of football. They got about 4 or 5 half goal chances off long lump balls into the square that Dermot Early was. You know, like Dermot Early wasn't a full forward. Like he was a midfielder or a wing forward midfielder. Like he wasn't a full forward. Would Murphy have made a massive difference if he had started the game a full forward? Would he have lasted?
Yeah, if you know, obviously one of their tactics was to boot the ball forward. Martin Lynch didn't really get any change from who he was up against. And Roy Craig was essentially there to take frees. And so he's the first one to come off because they didn't actually win any frees. And as soon as he gets subbed off, they actually get a scoreable, kickable free that might have got him into the game a little bit earlier on. But if you'd had Murphy up there, like, fighting with people because he was a man, then I think it would have made a significant difference. The ball would have stuck in the full forward line, but every time the ball got lorried up to them, it was coming straight back. And, you know, Galway have pace everywhere and were able to use that pace, and they were very smart about it. But I actually don't think it is a sliding doors moment. I was very surprised because, again, I haven't seen that game since then. But, like, so the Kildare of 1990, What I do remember is them being accused of playing basketball. Pardon me, and that they, you know, they were being accused of ruining the game because they were hand passing the ball too much. I actually expected them to be a team that hand passed the ball way more. Certainly, my memory of the team at that stage was that they were a team who passed the ball, hand passed the ball way more than this team did. And I was surprised to see so much ball being kicked forward. But like, I think that's what our style should be. Like, I think that's what our county's identity should be. They should get the tape from this game and go, you do everything except when you're in a scoring position, you give it to one of your anointed kickers and you don't try those Hail Mary shots from where you can't score from And I'm looking at you, defenders and half-forwards.
Well, I could definitely see Kevin Feeley and Tommy Mulick replacing Buckley and McCreary in midfield. And I could absolutely see Daniel Flynn being the man on the end of the square with Paddy Brophy hanging around him. And perhaps Jimmy Hyland, if he gets better. Like, that could be, there you go, that could be it. That's the trick that could be missing.
I think
so. Who should Murphy have started in front of? Is it Carlo Dwyer?
No, he should have started in front of Corey Craven, and they should have decided that somebody else is going to take the frees.
Is that not a bit revision?
Or maybe you keep Martin Lynch in reserve.
Is that not like very much a hindsight call? Wasn't Craven brilliant in the All-Ireland semi-final? Obviously, he was terrible in this game. He had a very bad day, and things did not go his way.
He was a free taker. He was like this is the last era where you're allowed to have a free taker in your team, as opposed to somebody whose job it is to tackle or win ball. And the way that Kildare were playing, they couldn't afford to have, like, so. I don't know. I honestly, Tommy, I don't know. Like, did he come off the bench in the Leinster final against me and score the goal that won it, or did he start that game? I can't remember.
It's just that they lumped so much ball in on early. Like, they just kept lumping it in. And they didn't get goal chances on. Yeah, they got chances. They got a lot of chances, yeah.
Well, in the very first, is it the second or third minute of the game, Dermot Early gets catches a ball, shovels and Ray Silk slides off into the distance. And he's actually through one-on-one, but it's his like first possession of the game. And he snatches a shot and it goes wide. But if he brought that on, if he brought that on, it was a goal chance.
Yeah, McNamara made a good save off Lynch, yeah.
It's funny, Tommy, you talk about bad wides. I remember somebody saying, oh, all wides are bad. But it's not somebody who was from Kildare, because there's a difference between good wides and bad wides. And Kildare had many bad wides. And that's the other part of the DNA here that Mayo share, where forwards snatch at chances that seem straightforward and defenders come up and decide they're going to try Hail Mary. And you're like, please, can we just give it to somebody who can just kick it over on a fairly regular basis? Or can we find a couple of those players whose job it is to like be the one who's kicking it? And maybe that's what they should use Paul Craven for, I don't know. Like, so his job was not to win ball, but they were certainly kicking the ball into him to try and win it.
I wonder about that. Like, I kind of found myself watching this game and thinking it felt like a really, really, really good club championship final. That's how it felt like. And I don't know whether that's because we're watching such levels of exceptional decision making nowadays, that you know the standards that are there with Dublin 75% in an All Ireland final or Kerry shooting accuracy, but it just felt like there was just decisions being made and shots being taken that you get hooked nowadays for doing that in a club game,
including some that actually went over. Jaff Allen in particular would have got hooked for all the points he kicked in this final. They were all amazing.
You couldn't hook Jaff Allen.
He scored
at half time, maybe his first half. It was like that second half. I actually think that second half performance of Jaff Allen is one of the greatest 35 minutes of individual sport I've ever borne witness to. Jaff Allen looked at Kildare and with his bare hands ripped their heart out and feasted on it in front of their children. He was the one who killed us. And I remember on the day going, you can't, like, and you can't see it from the TV pictures, but like shoulders slumped as Fallon hit one first from the left-hand side and then from the right-hand side. The line ball, like, Glenn Ryan thinks he's got some safety here. It's the right thing to do. Just get a touch on it. It's out for a line ball. Jaff Allen in his Puma Kings, which I think looked yellow. I've never seen yellow Puma Kings, and I've never seen them before or since. Sunshine. And he just kicks it over, and it's over the black spot from the touchline. This wasn't regular. There weren't that many lads who were kicking the ball over from the touchline in the 90s. Like, no. There just weren't. It didn't happen that often. Morris Fitz, obviously. Like, yeah, we remember Morris Fitz.
Well, exactly. That's actually that's what I thought when we saw Jaff Allen. It's like in consecutive All Ireland finals, you have two incredible sideline scores, and one of them is far more remembered than the other. I think that Jaff Allen is a fairly unheralded part of the history of Galway. I know people who think Galway will always hold him up, but I think he's actually. I did not know he was this good in this final. I just want to go through the teams before we get into a couple of the moments of the match.
We're supposed to get started. We can get started now, aren't we?
Yeah, let's start. You're very welcome, everybody.
Hit record there on.
I think it's just important to go through the teams on paper here because, like, I love this Galway team. I think it's. I don't want to call it the hipster team of the last 22 years, but I think it is. I don't think any team that's ever come after this.
This is so depressing, by the way. There's a global pandemic on, and you made me sit through this again today for the first time in 22 years. This is like, this is the worst it's been. This is my lowest. This is the nadir of this entire last 2 weeks.
So Galway, managed by John O'Mahony, they had Martin McNamara in goal, Tomás Meehan, Gary Fahey and Tomás Mannion, their full back line. What a half back line. Ray Silk, John Dively, Sean Oakden-Poyer. In midfield, you had Kevin Walsh and Sean O'Donnell. You had Michael Donnellan, Jaff Allen and Shea Walsh. At the half forward line, Derek Savage, Paul Joyce and Neil Finnegan, the full forward line. Quality all over.
Can I just make one point? Shea Walsh, I had no recollection of Shea Walsh before or after this game, but there was just a little bit of skill in the middle of it where he dribbled around five or six of them and it ends up like they get a 45 off it because the umpire didn't imagine something. But it was amazing. He didn't touch it. Absolutely didn't touch it. But anyway, they missed the 45, so justice was served. But I had no recollection of him as a footballer, and he was brilliant. Really, like, that kind of jinky, you can see how over the course of a season he doesn't maybe end up having that much of an impact. But he comes into the final team. Big in a couple of moments.
I think he's the one change from the semi-final, isn't he? That's a scene in the Yertle Sunday where they're telling the team for the final and everybody congratulates Shea Walsh on actually being the man who gets the call-up. The Kildare team then managed by Mick O'Dwyer, goalkeeper Christy Byrne, a full back line of Brian Lacey, Davey Dalton, Ken Doyle, Anthony Rainbow, Glenn Ryan.
Davey Dalton didn't start. Davey Dalton didn't start. Soss comes in instead of him. Davey.
Wikipedia.
Davey is like you can see him. He's there in a hoodie at the end, but like, he looks about 60. Honestly, like, he was in the very latter stages of his career, but would have been a spiritual leader for them. Now, whether or not he would have had the pace for any of that team, I'm not sure, but he certainly would have clattered a few lads, and his reading of the game might have got him out of situations. So look, who knows? Go on, sorry, halfback.
Yeah, no, my apologies. I think the rest of this is correct. The halfback line, Anthony Rainbow, Glenn Ryan and John Finn. You'd Niall Buckley and Willie McCreary in midfield. You'd Eddie McCormack, Declan Kerrigan and Dermot Early wearing the half-forward jerseys anyway. I think Dermot Early was everything from a midfielder to a full-forward during this game. And you'd Martin Lynch, Carlo Dwyer and Padraig Graven in the full-forward line. So just on like some of these injuries, there's a lot of folklore about rumours in the build-up to games when it comes to All-Ireland, but I think Kildare is probably a level above. So Ronan Quinn definitely out through injury. Niall Buckley hadn't been fit enough to train properly for weeks. Anthony Rainbow and Brian Lacey had hamstring niggles. Glenn Ryan pulled a thigh muscle while playing golf 2 days before the final. And then you'll hear in commentary from Jerry Canning that Willie McCreary, assistant trainer to Aidan O'Brien at the time, was rumoured to have been hit by a horse during the week, but he had played down those rumours. Apparently that wasn't true. Mikko, in his book in 2000, said, "When I saw the way things were going in the last few days before the match, I knew our luck had run out and that barring a miracle, we couldn't win. We should never have played Buckley. He was clearly unfit, but we gambled on his fitness and made a serious mistake. While it was, of course, a joint decision by the four selectors, I must accept most of the responsibility. I had been faced..."
All of it!
"I had been faced with a similar situation in the 1976 All-Ireland final against Dublin when we took a chance on the fitness of Jimmy Deanahan and Gerard O'Keefe with disastrous results." You blame Mikko.
It was kind of heartbreaking to see. Like, Niall Buckley's my favourite footballer, and he just didn't do himself justice in the final. There's a nice point at the end of the game where you kind of see that's exactly what it should have been like. And this should have been his time to bestride Kildare history like a colossus, and like the colossus that he was. And I would say, up until that point, Brian Lacey had been in with a shout for Footballer of the Year because he'd nullified everybody's best forwards in the previous rounds. I think he'd gone directly up against Morris Fitz, who obviously was coming off the back of the final the previous year. And so in everybody's sense that when Morris Fitz gets to Croke Park in the All-Ireland semi-final, he's going to do untold damage. And Glenn Ryan clearly also wasn't fit. Like, if these guys were fit, who knows what would have happened? But look, I obviously I'm completely and utterly one-eyed when it comes to looking at this game for the first time again. It's hard not to acknowledge that Galway team, I can see why they are the hipsters team of the last 2.5 decades, because I didn't remember that the Donlan run happened so early in the game.
Yeah,
like in my head, it's kind of part of that second half. I was like, hang on a second, look where he is. I recognize this. But those injuries, they definitely did not help.
I'm starting to really understand this connection with Mayo football and Kildare football. Excuses.
Just not enough strength and depth.
Strength and
depth. Strength and depth,
point-taking ability.
That was a great moment with Canning on commentary. Like, Willie McCreary, horse of a man, involved with horses his whole life, rumoured to be hit by a horse in the build-up to the final.
Okay, moments of the match. Jerry, you mentioned Michael Donnellan, solo run. The wine is being consumed because it is the only way to do this. This is not only the moment of the match, this is the moment of all time, according to the public of Ireland, when I was voted the number one moment in 2005. Now, I remember this crystal clear. This happened in 2005, but I remember it like yesterday, sitting in my living room as a kid, watching this event on a Saturday night that RTÉ had put on. Morris Fitz's sideline point against Dublin coming in number two, getting beaten by Michael Donnellan's solo run. But there was this big, massive banquet on in Galway on the night where RTÉ were broadcasting from. And everybody was obviously just texting in their vote that night. It was a movement that happened in Galway to ensure this would become the number one moment of all time.
Yeah, it was like Ronnie O'Brien, who was on Juventus' books at one point, becoming Times Man of the Millennium. It was like, I think David O'Doherty was behind that campaign. I mean, it's a great moment. It's certainly an important moment in the game. I'm not even sure it was Michael Donnellan's greatest moment in the game. It was a beautiful point.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, but yeah, it was great. I mean, it's not my, is it my moment of the game? It's actually not my moment of the game. There was a bit in the second half where Declan Carrigan kicked a beautiful, one of those perfect balls that you can come and attack a diagonal, like from the middle of the pitch, which is actually hard to do, but he sweeps his foot across it and it kind of swerves around and it's into the kind of right corner forward position. And I think it's really quite late in the game where it's Murphy and Dermot Early who go up and challenge each other and bang off each other. And the two of them are lying on the ground and the ball falls to a Galway man. And I'm like, oh, that's exactly the two lads who you would have wanted in there at that stage. If one stays down and the other one knocks it down to him, then everything's going to be great. But it was a day of incoherency from a Kildare perspective.
Tommy, what's your moment of the match?
I kind of thought that Donnellan run ended a little differently than it did. I was a little bit like, when it started, I was like, oh my God, it's this early. And then when it finished with, you know, it was a lovely little score, another pass and a point. I was a little bit underwhelmed that it was that moment. I thought it ended with a score, but it was his chip up a couple of minutes later. And it just kind of made him stand out as different class. The way that he just chipped that ball up, ran through. He just looked to be playing a level above other players. And to be honest, the only other player that perhaps illustrated that a little later was probably Jaff Allen in the second half. But for me, it was either that moment with Donnellan, and then there was one more moment. I'm not going to pick it as my moment of the match, but I absolutely loved Niall Finnegan's second point in the second half. It came off the back of a Donnellan run. And Anthony Rainbow can do nothing but just drag his jersey back. And there's nothing more he can do but just drag his jersey. You don't see a good jersey drag anymore in Gaelic football. So I'm going to give to that first Donnellan point, though, when he chips up that breaking ball on the ground and saunters through and puts that ball over the bar. He just looked a different class.
The Paul Joyce goal is the moment of the match, I think. It's unbelievable. Like, you do have Michael Donnellan doing what Michael Donnellan does best, in my opinion, during this. He is the middleman. You've got John Dively, wins a free, belts it forward, and they'd started going route one to Joyce a good bit at this stage, realised it had started working. But it's Donnellan who actually just gets in the middle of this, catches this. It's an outrageously good ball from Dively. But Donnellan, we sometimes underrate the art of the hand pass, but the timing of this hand pass is perfect. He takes three Kildare men out of it. Joyce is in, rounds the keeper, back the net. It wins the All-Ireland for Galway, in my opinion. And I think from John Dively's pass forward, it's brilliant, a three-part piece of brilliance. Dively, because he's got his collar up, he's automatically 20% better at football.
I mean, that's minus for Nuxer, but Dively was great. Another one of the under-21s. It was him, it was Donlan, it was Joyce. I can't remember who the other two was. Savage, one of them? I'm not sure. Maybe Finnegan. Finnegan's a bit older, I think. But that was why this Galway team especially came from nowhere. Like, the point about the previous Mayo team being one of the best teams in the country and it being their time that year, like, you know, would, if it had been a Mayo Kildare final, can you imagine how apeshit the country would have been for, like, at last one of these two teams is going to be reaching the promised land? And Galway came from nowhere to beat that brilliant Mayo team and knock them out first round of the Connacht Championship. The backdoor system, the absence of the backdoor, was like such a chronic waste of brilliant games for a century. There's like a century's worth of what ifs because yes. there was no backdoor system. And do you know what? Even the backdoor system, I think the next year wouldn't have allowed you in if you lost in the first round of the championship. They were like, no, screw you. You lost in the first round, even though you're the best team yeah. in the country. I was like, it was insane.
Let's talk about that, because like I have to stand for something that jarred at me a little bit later on, but we may as well get into it. The kind of semi-known quantity of some of these players. And like this goes far more for Kildare than it does for Galway, because Galway obviously were back in another All-Irelands in 2000, win another All-Ireland in 2001. This is a very famous set of players. But the likes of Declan Kerrigan and Eddie McCormack, these are sort of lost names in the GAA. Excellent footballers who, like everybody knows Dermot Early, but for a certain generation of players, there's no backlog of actually having a huge volume of games on the internet or having a huge volume of involvement at the business end of the season, because you lose in Leinster, you lose at Dublin or Meath, you're done.
You know it's possible, even in a country that has been colonised, to be a colonial wanker. That's what you're being right now, Owen. your Kerry exceptionalism, like, oh, I've never heard of Eddie McCormack or Declan Kerrigan. They're certainly in the conversation for Mount Rushmore of Kildare footballers. You're like at least having a conversation, like in modern era, right? They're at least getting, there's somebody there from their club whose job it is to make a recommendation for them. And eventually we go, no, you probably don't make it. But you going, I've never even heard of these guys. Who are these guys? Look at them.
Of course I've heard of these guys. Of course. But I'm saying that they are nowhere near the level of fame that you would imagine. Say even
any
somebody,
of those. Yeah. Like, say that somebody
talk about somebody who's been in one All-Ireland over the last 10 years. You're talking about the Tyrone players like Matty Donnelly, Cathal McShane. Mm. They've been in one All-Ireland, for example. Far bigger names, just because there is one extra round, there's actually a back door. The league is far more important. Like, even now, even though we're doing a fraction of what we possibly can do with the product that is Gaelic games, now it is something that is much better. It's
completely ramped up. Well, like when you think about it, I was reporting for a local Dublin radio station, and I was allowed into the dressing room afterwards for both change rooms to go and ask questions of people, and that meant that there was like obviously five or six other people. Maybe there might have been 10 people who were doing that same job. Now obviously the press box would be full, there'd be 100 people, and you would have in-depth analysis, and there would be stats from the league, and there would be league games on air. There'd be some now on RTE, and there'd be games on Sky and also on RTE during the summer, so you would have access to much more information about these players. Kerrigan was great, like really.
Yeah, he was. He was super in that game.
Yeah, much better kind of controller of the game than I remembered. Eddie McCormack, that was like the archetypal Eddie McCormack performance. There was a couple of brilliant, absolutely brilliant points, and of all of the players from Kildare, he died with his boots on, but there was also a couple of bad wides mixed in with the middle of it, and that was you know, there was a live wire element to his performance that the team certainly needed. But yeah, like, was your question about why do we not know a bit more about this Kildare team? Essentially because it's completely unfair. If you don't win an All-Ireland, you are considered a loser. Like, yeah. Glenn Ryan was a sensational footballer, and this game does no justice whatsoever to his career. I was thinking about this as well, about when we were talking about Seamus Moynihan the last day. Glenn Ryan is Kildare's version of Seamus Moynihan. He is as important in Kildare football as Seamus Moynihan is, but, and I'm not saying he's the same footballer or as good as him, but like, because they didn't get over the line, he's just another of those great footballers who never won All-Ireland. But like, it's just not, life ain't fair.
I think the fact that losers get forgotten is very true there as well. But there is such a lack of great GAA documentaries. I'm not sure it can be underestimated how much of an impact Pat Comer's Year to Sunday has on the grow that's there for these Galway footballers as well. I know they get their two All-Irelands, but like, that documentary had a massive impact on a lot of GAA people growing up too. Like, the amount of times that's been watched by most people, it's always been on YouTube. I think it's still up on YouTube.
It is.
There's all those great lines. Derek Savage, the fastest man in Ireland. Like,
yes.
They're just like, I wanted to know, like, I'll tell you one thing. I hated Sean Ogdepuyer when I was younger. He was the man that I hated because he broke a bone in Ollie Murphy's hand in the 2001 All-Ireland final. And I wasn't able, as an 8-year-old, I wasn't able to compute like how that can happen in a match. I actually just thought he was a bad guy. So I always thought Sean Ogdepuyer was a bad guy in my head. So I really appreciated how good he was as a footballer when I watched back this All-Ireland final today. Those 2 points he scored were brilliant.
In fairness, this Galway team, so they win another All-Ireland, but they also get beaten by Kerry in All-Ireland's final replay, don't they?
Yeah,
2000.
yeah, like those two games are two more games that the whole country are watching. And doesn't Sean O'Dwyer score the greatest goal in Croke Park ever that day?
No, that was Meehan. That's Declan Meehan.
Is it Declan Meehan scores the goal?
Yeah, Declan Meehan. Yeah.
Is there a pass for Sean O'Dwyer? Oh, is there an amazing over the shoulder pass?
Yeah, over the shoulder pass.
He's looking the wrong way. Okay, is that? Yeah.
I'm getting that up here now so we don't mess it up.
Anyway, I think that all feeds into the love that people have for this Galway team as well. So it's the big games, it's the two All-Irelands, it's the lost All-Ireland. So they come back from defeat to win the next year. And it's the fact that they played such brilliant football. Like,
it's an outrageous pass from Sean O'Dwyer. I'm just watching it here. It's a kick pass on the turn and unbelievable finish from Meehan, actually.
I don't mean to do Meehan a disservice, but who kicked the point after the Michael Donlan run? You can tell me now because you watched it this afternoon, but if you hadn't, and I was like, well, okay, it turns out to be Sean O'Dwyer. But you wouldn't have known that, right? I remember that goal as Sean O'Dwyer's goal, and I apologise to the Meehan family, the Meehans, for mistaking it as Sean O'Dwyer's goal, because in my head it's Sean O'Dwyer's. It's like, it's ridiculous.
Is it Sean O'Dwyer who passes it? Why is he receiving the ball in the turn as a half forward?
Well, good point. I think I get that wrong too.
That's not Sean O'Dwyer, lads. Hold on.
You do have a fairly good excuse there, Jer. I want to get into secret man of the match, but like just before we get into secret man of the match, the actual man of the match in this is Michael Donlan. And like just to finish up on any last things we have to say about Donlan on this, like for me, in this game, he looks like the county minor who is at his first year minor with his county and is now playing his first game at senior level with his club. As in, the only thing that he doesn't have compared to everybody else is the stature, but he is better than everybody else. He is faster than everybody else. He is more skillful than everybody else. That is Michael Donlan in this final, in pretty much any game you see him play for Galway.
Paul Clancy played the pass to Declan Meehan.
Ah, bollocks. All right, apologies to Paul Clancy. What's with Donald not involved at all? Right, okay.
Michael Donlan on.
He gets man of the match. So, secret man of the match. Any shouts outside of Michael Donlan? I think, like, we've mentioned Jaff Allen already. Like, his range of scoring, absolutely fantastic.
What point are you making about Donlan then?
He's an alien being, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Do we have any last thoughts on Donlan before we move on?
Where does Donlan rank amongst the Galway forwards on that day, in that six? Where do you put Michael Donlan?
Well, one or two. On the day, like, I think you can make an argument for Jaff Allen to be man of the match given his second half performance.
I was going to pick Niall Finnegan as my man of the match. But like you mentioned Jaff Allen's 3 points in the second half, but like it's his fielding, right? There's three parts of Jaff Allen's second half performance. Those three exceptional points, there's his fielding in midfield, and then there's the fact that he feigns injury with about 5 minutes to go. There's his 3 points. He lies down. And can I just say one more thing that hasn't been mentioned yet so far? Can I say one more thing? Mick Byrne played such a key role. Mm. That's unbelievable. I didn't realise that. I did not realise. I had to go back. I got lost in Google of Mick Byrne's GA credentials.
Mick Byrne giving tactical advice at one point. I was like, hang on a second. What?
Yeah, there's a great piece in the Indo from Liam Horan in 1998 describing Mick Byrne as Europe's most recognised sports physio.
Can you imagine he would be Joe Wicks now with 1.6 million viewers if he just had been in the right generation every morning. I think Ja was not feigning injury. I think they finally realised they had to get him and they got him. I think John Finn was a good man for an L tackle with the elbow to the Niall Finnegan at one point shakes his head after one. There was one in the first minute
John Finn
wins the ball and comes out with his elbow and the referee's like, oh come on, that's a free, and it's like, yeah, I mean it is, and it's a red card these days. It's like straight to that. The tackling was old school, certainly. Let's talk about these forwards because this is like this is the great debate about where everybody should be versus each other. Like Ja in the first half wasn't as good as he was in the second half. In the second half, he was as good as anybody's ever been in an All-Ireland final for 35 minutes. But Donlan, when the team needs it and they're getting completely overrun by Kildare, appears in the left corner back situation to make that run and then kicks another few points. Joyce, I think, in the first half, is like he's upright like a horse. Like, we deserve to be here. He's strutting around. Now, he in the first half, he doesn't perform like he's capable of. And in the second half, he does. And there's one really bad wide when the crowd groans. But other than that, like, Joyce is absolutely a thoroughbred. You can see it here. Like, he's announcing himself on the national stage as somebody who is going to be a really important character in football from this point forward. And that journey's not run. Like, it's very interesting to see how many of that Galway team have gone on to be involved in inter-county management versus how many of that Kildare team have. And, you know, I think that's the sliding doors moment for me, and we'll get to that in a minute. But the man of the match, I absolutely think the right decision is made in giving it to Donnellan, because I think that in the first half when they needed him, when there was a chance that they might have been overrun if Kildare didn't have the Wides disease, that the game might have got out. But Jazz second half, like, if Jaff Fallon was man of the match and driving away in the car, I'm like, happy days.
Mm. It has to be one of the two of them. And I was going to ask about poor Joyce, and like, it's interesting that you describe him as a thoroughbred in his posture, but I think even in his performance as well, you can't knock poor Joyce off the ball. Like, I think there's obviously a good streak of selfishness that comes through in the second half where he blasts that terrible wide. But is that not just part of the whole Galway makeup at the time, that they're like, we're good enough? I as an individual, like, speaking from Pádraig Joyce's perspective, I'm good enough. And that's what they all seem to think.
That's all that matters.
I think Joyce's performance really was good. I think when you're looking for qualities in a full forward, what you're looking for is somebody who can win their own ball, but also who isn't afraid to miss. Like, Joyce had a couple of misses. He had a couple of frees of 45 that went wide, yet he delivered. He was composed. Oh, and when you described that goal earlier on, you spoke about Dively's collar and Dively's pass and Donnellan's hand pass, and then how Joyce rounded the keeper. I don't think you can actually... I think you understated a little bit how he rounded Christy Byrne that time. It was such a gorgeous step. Like, if David Clifford or Dean Rock or Mannion or Conn was to do that nowadays, it'd be replayed.
Or Lewis Suarez.
If it was James Carr, it'd have 10 million views now already on Twitter. Like, it was just such a gorgeous step to go around the keeper and stick it in the back of the net. I just think that...
Donald's run would be the 10 million views. Like, it would be.
100%. 100%. And the sideline from Jaff Allen wouldn't be far off it either.
There were a couple of times when Donlan made a run to get a ball back and they didn't give it to him. And for history's sake, you want to go back and just tap whoever it is on the shoulder and go, give it to Michael Donlan. Mm. Your YouTube numbers will be off the hook. Go, give it to Donlan.
Before we move on, can we just talk about those Galway six forwards? Because, like, Niall Finnegan's so good. Derek Savage, we know how electric he is. Like, if Savage buries that goal, he's at a great All-Ireland final too. Like, Finnegan is probably the leading man throughout it. And then obviously Donnellan, Jaff Allen. Like, how do you rank them? How are you supposed to stop that? How are Galway not favourites? How are Galway not favourites going into that Ireland?
Well, because they're a bunch of kids. Because Michael Donnellan is a kid. Because Pádraig Joyce is a kid. That's the thing. We didn't know that they were all-time greats. We didn't know that Donnellan and Joyce were going to go on and have these careers. They were under 21s that season. Like, that's the... they weren't the Kerry under 21 team who had won two in a row. They weren't like the greatest under 21s that we've ever seen. Like, that's why. To be honest, like, I thought Finnegan was good, but his reliability from frees was the most important thing that he had. And like, both teams actually had fairly bad wides. And, you know, I'm talking exclusively from the Kildare side, as you can see. But like, if I was a Galway supporter and we'd lost that game in that first half, the wides in the second half, the second quarter, the second part of the first half, they were horrific. They were kicking the ball into Christy Byrne's hands just as much as Kildare were. It was like, Jesus. So I would argue the quality of this game is way below what, in my mind, without having watched it back, it felt at the time like it was two absolute heavyweights. But it was two teams, Galway, searching for their identity as kids and in the backbone of the team. And Kildare, we didn't know it at the time, but like, who had shot their bolt really in reaching the All-Ireland final. Like, that was wringing the last bit out from them. Jesus, that's so hard.
Well, like, that's one of the things that jars with me in this, is the fact that it's Kildare against Galway in an All-Ireland football final. Even watching it back, it does actually kind of feel a little bit weird that this is actually a contest directly for Sam Maguire. They've only met two times since then. One was the 2000 semi-final. The other time was that Super 8s game in 2018. It's not a noted rivalry whatsoever. They didn't play that much before this either. It was this strange moment in time when you could have an All-Ireland final like this. And that's why perhaps the occasion and the context is underrated, but perhaps the game is we kind of overrate the game itself when we think about it. Like, just talking about things that jarred with you, is there anybody there that wants to lead us off? For me, it's the half-finished Croke Park, and it's the kind
yes.
of the, like, I can see the old Croke Park, and I can see the new Croke Park, but the half-finished Croke Park is a very strange thing to see. The perfect.
Are you talking about the sidelines?
Yeah, like the perfect roof and the Cusick stand, and then the Hogan stand still being the old version, which kind of peels around into the hill, and the old style screen on that side, but then a proper big screen on another side of the stadium. Just a half-finished stadium is just very, very unusual.
Mm. When I was thinking about most jarring, I was comparing this game in 1998 with today, 2020, what the football we're seeing nowadays, but also with the last football match that I watched, and that was the 1990 All-Ireland football final. And I think there was quite a few jarring moments from this as well. One of them is the tackling. Jerry mentioned it earlier on. There's that kind of handoff at the very first minute. I was very surprised that was given as a free to Galway, as the Kildare defender's coming out with the ball, nails Niall Finnegan in the face, and the free is given to Galway.
That's a correct call.
It's the 90s. I thought that stuff was allowed back
then.
Yeah,
come on, let him play on. Let the players play.
At Mick Lyons and Jerry McEntee slide tackling the Cork boys, and Colm O'Neill gets sent off for a wee puck, you know, 2 weeks ago. That was one of the jarring things for me. And the second most jarring thing also relates back to 1990. Glenn Ryan is the only man of 30 with a knee brace on.
Okay.
And the last All-Ireland final I watched in 1990 had about 6.
Yeah, clearly the times have changed in those 8 years. This is clearly more of a 21st century encounter.
I took a picture of Mick Byrne squirting water on, was it Michael Donlan's calf? He's like, he's literally just squirting, he had a Lucozade bottle squirting water on it. It wasn't even a magic sponge, it was just a squirt of water. That was it. It was like, he was, I've got to, I'm like, ah, come on, what is that? What are you actually doing there? Nothing. It's like, Michael, Mick, you appear to be squirting water on my, have you any medicine?
When I saw Mick Byrne on the side, I went to do a little Google, and there's a good piece, as I mentioned, in the end of 98. There's a good quote. So Mick Byrne was involved with John O'Mahony all throughout most of his inter-county days. So when John O'Mahony helped Leitrim to win the Connacht title in 1994, I was involved in treating some of their injured players too. But at that time, I didn't go to the matches. So he was involved, and he must have just been going to training. He must have been busy. But he was saying that he doesn't actually go onto the field as a doctor. He lets the doctor do that job, and just after last then. But he started going to games then in 97 and 98. He won a Dublin Senior Club Football Championship medal with Clonmacnoise, and played alongside Mickey Whelan, Christy Kane, Jerry Brady and Paddy Holden on that team. And I also didn't realise that Mick Byrne was an accomplished show jumper, as well as obviously being the face of Irish soccer. 90. Yeah.
There you go. That's I didn't know that either.
Jumper.
In terms of stuff that was trending at the time, the goalie gloves. Like, I know it was a wet day beforehand, but like, why is this not a thing anymore? When did that kind of go out? Like, here on Whelan, we see the last great goalie gloves person we have. Like, it was all the rage, obviously, in 98.
What did Micheál O'Donnell have in his hands? It looked like one of those gloves you see. Sean O'Donnell. What did he have? It only seemed to be on his right hand, and it looked like one of the latex gloves that people are using now to try and avoid the coronavirus. It was like, so it was see-through and it was white, and it was like, what the hell is that? So I don't know why more people didn't have goalie gloves. Like, Kieran Whelan did, and he was around that time, so I don't know why more people didn't.
Yeah,
I watched this with my kids, and they're like, the fashion's very old. And that's my 8-year-old was like, going, this looks very old. She thought it was like from ancient history, and
a lot of weird hats.
It is.
The hats and the flags are like, we always bang on
the
about
flags
and how GAA just doesn't have them anymore. Like,
let's bring them back. The flags are amazing. It's like, it's exactly my memory of what it was like to go to matches, was like this infestation of flags, and it was beautiful.
Why did they ever go out of fashion? What happened? It's just like with time,
sustainability, lads. Sustainability, that's why.
Okay.
Bamboo. The flags are bamboo. The flag thing that you hold, whatever that's called.
Stick.
Flag stick. Yeah. I was going to say staff, but it's too early in the morning. And the actual flag itself, I don't know, I presume it's cotton. But anyway, I think that it's a weapon that you're able to beat people over the head with it. I'm sure some Meath fans probably did, Tommy, and you ruined it for all of us.
Probably. All, no comments. Everything can be blamed on me. One last thing on the stuff that kind of jarred is the stature of a lot of the lads. Derek Savage, Donlan, Declan Kerrigan, all small lads, absolutely flying around the pitch. You don't have that volume of small lads in any intercounty game anymore. And then there was three or four, a handful of players here, which were some of the best players on the park.
Yeah, there was a big difference in 1992 where they were all, apart from Bernie Flynn, they were all massive.
Mm, Donlan's small. Donlan's quite big, isn't he? He's actually about 6 foot, I think.
Is he?
Is he?
I'd say that's 5'10" to 6". Eddie McCormick's not a huge man either, but definitely. But then, Kildare were a big team. If you think of Dermot Early, McCreary, Niall Buckley, Martin Lynch is over 6 feet. Obviously Murphy when he came in. Glenn Ryan's a big man. Oh, look, what a team. I love them. Mm. I love those men.
I want to play some of the reaction because here is Ger Canning. We'll hear his voice first, I think, and then we're going to hear President of the GAA, Joe McDonough, of course, who was President at the time, and Galway captain Ray Silk. So we're getting to the part here where Galway have won the All-Ireland and the trophy presentation is about to happen.
Ach, in you, is she, Mavrod, agus Mahoos Amora. Marostalon and Common Lothlat Scale. Karam Sam McGuire. Avrada and Captain Voka Magaileva. Don Cabo Rosatse. Yes,
so Joe McDonough presents Sam to Ray. The West is truly awake. Galway are the All-Ireland Football Champions for 1998. What a day. What an occasion. Now, remember when he last received the trophy? Remember the length of the speech on that occasion? I think the Angelus will probably put back to 7 o'clock tonight. And look at the tears in the eyes. What an occasion. It's impossible not to be affected. A truly great sporting occasion. And what a moment now.
Winter Conlon Agaiba. Winter Conlon. And now he be Joseph McDonough, I can't be Gottok, Dion Gottok and Kieran, Jeff Bleem, I be Gottok who Fawcett and Conan and Craig Connock, Trace Tucker, Doe Bleem, Tasha Arnold Dom, Oxham Winter, Gallagher, and Conchar Glocker, Oxaya Tasnu, Aaron Sanon.
Yeah, there is Phil and his speech afterwards talking about going over to Shannon. We'll talk about the commentary in just a moment, but that mention of the Angelus in the middle of it actually kind of came as a bit of a warning because it seems Ray Silk is being told midway through, kind of like the Oscars, to wrap up, stop talking because the Angelus is up.
Well, he said it himself. Wow. It was they were unhappy with me the last time I was talking here on RTE. He's clearly laying the way for his future media career. Always one eye on the future. And it was an excellent speech, like a proper, this is the end of a famine speech. And I thought he did a great job.
Yeah, so sorry, you were just saying there during the clip about the co-coms.
Co-com. It was Ger Canning on his own for the whole thing. And I actually don't remember when co-coms were introduced. It was obviously some kind of massive step forward. But there was, as far as I remember, are there no co-coms for football matches at that stage? When did they start for soccer?
Yeah, I'm not quite sure because obviously when we were watching the 1990 game back to last day, it was obviously a commentator on its own as well. Actually, that's one of the things. One thing that definitely doesn't jar with you when you listen, when you watch back this game. It's 22 years ago and it's Ger Canning on commentary handing over to Marty Morrissey on the sideline. Yeah. It's that could be commentary from tomorrow.
I didn't really notice. I'll be honest, I actually didn't. It didn't really click with me that Ger Canning was on his own. I don't know why I didn't notice that.
Mm-hmm. Marty Morrissey was the Aaron Andrews from ESPN of his day, was he?
Absolutely. Yes.
On the sideline. He could have used Marty a bit more. He only really used him around subs.
And Marty was Niall Buckley has been offered a pair of boots.
Yeah.
Niall Buckley has turned down the pair of boots. Back to you, Ger.
I want to play one more clip before we wrap up today. And it's a last clip from A Year Till Sunday because there's great footage of Mick O'Dwyer in the Galway dressing room after the game, giving his speech to the Galway players, congratulating them as the gracious defeated to
just to say a few words, lads. I know what winning is about. I know what losing is about as a player, as a man in charge of teams. But today, lads, there was no question or doubt about it, lads. You were a better team on the day. You played marvellous football. It's 1966 since you won your last. And in 1964 and 65, he gave me some heartaches on that occasion. But today, I enjoyed it out there today, even though he beat us well. At one stage in the first half, I thought we were going to do it. We had you up to halftime, but you came out in the second half. And he gave a superb display of football for the second half. And on that, I congratulate you. Marvellous achievement for Galway and for the West of Ireland as well as. Marvellous. Congratulations. Well done.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Michael.
In fairness, what a legend. Like, what an absolute legend. And I know he didn't get it done there, but I think he was so close. Like, when you consider, again, the point that I made at the very start, like, the smell of want and how far from victory Kildare have ever been, and for them to get so close to be ahead and dominant at half-time in an All-Ireland final, you know, I actually think that probably they got a lot of decisions wrong, but like, that's, here we are 20 years later, you're making a point, there's a bit of after time going on about maybe Brian Murphy should have started. Like, there is, it absolutely is after timing. Like, that career that he put together, he's had 21 All-Ireland finals, his 21st and last All-Ireland final, and then he goes on and has the best era that Leash have ever had, and has like one of the best times that Wicklow football have ever had afterwards. Like, I think we probably do take Mikko for granted as a footballer himself and then as a manager. And, you know, like, the ability to ignite a county and to bring an entire county back to the point where they care about this enough for the smell of want to matter.
Yeah, absolutely. One last question, lads. Is this overrated or underrated? And any of your final thoughts as well?
I mean, I sent you around in the WhatsApp that Martin Brownies was like, say this is the third best All-Ireland final. Like, it isn't, it isn't. And so therefore you would say it is overrated. But like, having spoken about it for the last hour, I think that there are enough plots and subplots that as you say, like, when you consider this is Kildare against Galway for an All-Ireland title, Sam Maguire gets handed out at the end of this game. How far away are we now from that ever being a situation that we'd envisage again? Like, can you see a scenario in the next decade where these two teams could meet in an All-Ireland final and we'd all be like, oh, that makes perfect sense. They're the two best teams in the country.
Townsend Cup, maybe.
There you go. You know what, maybe we could, like, we have a situation here where currently Galway are top of the Alliance National Football League. Kildare have an All-Ireland winning manager. There's an under-20s All-Ireland win in the bank a couple of years ago. Maybe we're closer than we have been for the last 10 years. But still, that doesn't really say much for the prospects of having the sort of final again. Maybe one of these counties, I think, could go to an All-Ireland final at some point in the next
10 years. You feel like Galway are pretty close to it. But like, it's very hard, obviously, as somebody who is so heartbroken watching this again, to think of it as like this great thing that happened. But maybe it is. I don't know. Like, I mean, you, as you talk about the hipsters loving that Galway team, like, and the purists love that Galway team. That's the thing. Like, there's crossover appeal. They have broad appeal as one of the great football teams. So I can see how you can look at that. I mean, the current Brandy's from Galway, right? So, like, certainly if you learn with that All Ireland, I'd be like, God, this is the greatest All Ireland of all time. It ends a famine. What are you talking about? So,
yeah.
But you see, it does end the famine, though, as well. Like, it ends Galway.
If Galway
hadn't won that All Ireland in 1998, perhaps Sam Maguire wouldn't have gone across the Shannon in 2001 as well. Perhaps we'd still be waiting for because we know Mayo aren't going to do it. So we might still be waiting for an All Ireland to go across the Shannon.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think I kind of go along with that. I think the game itself, if you just watch the game back on YouTube, you'll probably think it's overrated. But then you look back at the context around this, one of the best sports documentaries that this country's ever had, one of the best teams, one of the most enjoyable teams, and a bizarre matchup, I think it's fair to say.
And Mikko.
And Mick Byrne. The two Micks and John O'Mahony, a Mayo man coming to Galway and winning an All-Ireland for them. The storylines are underrated. The game is overrated.
That we're going with?
Fair enough. Storylines are definitely underrated.
We're only, for the record, we're only saying the game is overrated because of what Brandy put in paper.
So who else? I haven't seen it rated anywhere else. I haven't seen anybody else talk about it.
Well, I had shouted from the rooftops to do this game in our Classic Game Club about a month ago. So maybe I overrated it a little bit too. But I don't think it is. I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like not really happy that I watched it. Like I was still going, what are you doing? Don't give it to him. Oh, what are you shooting for? Like there was definitely we're doing Tyrone against Kerry, Tyrone against Kerry, and Tyrone against Kerry for the next three, right? And
you can do a trilogy,
sounds good.
Yeah. I've never seen these games back.
I have one last question.
Yeah.
Jared, do you remember you were saying that you were a young hack in the dressing room back in 98? Do you remember who you spoke to in the dressing room after games that day?
I don't remember after that day specifically, but in the first round, Kildare drew against Dublin. And ordinarily, so the previous year, they'd drawn against Meath twice and then gone out the third day. And the first round in the Leinster Championship, they'd drawn against the Dubs. And I remember going into that dressing room afterwards and there was silence until Dermot Early, who was like 21 or 22 himself at that stage, spoke up and was like, that's not the end for us. This is not going to be how our season ends. Everybody's going to say that we lost our chance today. That's not right. We had them on the rack and we're going to get them the next day. And I was looking around at all the outlads who were kind of looking up at him going, geez, maybe he's right. And they did do that. Like, beating Dublin was such a big deal for them. And then beating Meath was such a big deal for them. Like, the first era of Mako being around, the only stories that we would ever hear about how the games went were, like, the Doves would be sidling up to our lads going, what's that smell of shite off these lads? Like, they were like you, Owen, basically. Like, looking down on the Muck Savages from Kildare, as we were at that point. And they were generally a team of Southern Kildare people as opposed to, you know, latter days, the Northern clubs in Kildare got their shit together and started to produce inter-county players by the ton. But I actually don't remember that much about the dressing room that day that much, like, because I guess I was too heartbroken to take it in.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's been a worthwhile experience watching this game back. If you've got any suggestions, tweet us at Off the Ball, especially GEA suggestions. We might do this every Monday morning here on OTB AM. Ger, Tommy, thanks a million.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.